The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
We're going to kick things off, as we do every day, with our afternoon update, catching you up on all that has happened today. With me for the afternoon update, Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star, and Gina London, a leadership communications expert and Sunday Independent columnist. You're both very, very welcome. Kieran, we might start with that immigration overhaul. There's a lot of different kind of threads to this. There's kind of some domestic policies that are changing that have nothing to do with the European Union. But the big ticket picture is bringing us in line or signing up to this EU migration pact. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone would argue, you know, the change isn't needed. You know, what we have now isn't working for so many reasons. Like, you see the protests around these centres, and a lot of these protests are down to misinformation, and there's mischievous figures behind a lot of them. And that might make some people think that, you know, the people in these centres are living in the lap of luxury. And it's far from the case. Like, a lot of the accommodation is really basic. Like, a lot of the, you sometimes see pictures of the food that people are given. And like, a lot of these providers are paid a serious amount of money, and they're given, you know, food that you barely give to a dog, I have to be honest now. But for all sorts of reasons, then, you know, the issue with hotels, because there are a lot of towns that only have one hotel, and keeping people going through the asylum process was a money spinner for hotel owners who normally would rely on very seasonal business. And now they're getting guaranteed paychecks week after week after week. So you can see where they jumped abroad that. But people still need their own hotels for various functions throughout a year. So I think the move away from hotels is a big part of this. The reforms would see a move away from full reliance on private providers and towards a core of state-owned accommodation. And the Cabinet is saying to deliver 14,000 state-owned beds by 2028. You know, that's four times the previous commitment. Now, this sounds quite ambitious, but, you know, they talk about using modular units, converting commercial units, current commercial buildings, and the targeted purchase of medium and larger turnkey properties. But I think that the prefab and modular units solution, or sorry, it can be a solution. Like, you see it in other countries and you see the cost. But some of the costings here for these modular units are ludicrous. Like, you do see them in other countries and they're able to put them up for about 20 grand and often a six-figure sums here. So I don't understand that distinction, but they should be a lot more affordable.
A lot of these solutions, Gina, as well, they're not short-term, not all of them, certainly. And I mean, we can sign up overnight to this EU migration pact and then rules change around the border at ports of entry, be they airport or ports, whatever it happens to be. But as Kieran says, I mean, this plan to have a massive expansion of state-owned accommodation, 2028 is the target set for that. If you want to retrofit office space out there, you're not going to do that overnight, particularly when there's a shortage of builders to do anything in the economy at the moment. As it is, and rapid build homes, I think I had a look before we came out. I think Alan Kelly was the junior minister in the Department of Housing when we first talked about rapid build housing. That was 9 years ago.
Well,
I think the rapid is meant ironically at this stage.
I moved here 9 years ago, and the word rapid must not mean very much at that point, because it certainly hasn't been rapid in any facet, let alone for immigrants in that category. But let's say, first of all, if any of this actually gets off the ground, and like any kind of a situation when a government says we're going to do this and our target date is 2028 and we have a potential election looming in February, when that could change who's in power and who's moving this whole project forward. So let's see. But certainly, at least if there is a mindset to move away from putting immigrants in the only hotel in a village, that is certainly not the best use of that. And like Kieran was saying about the financing for these hotel innkeepers, let's move now into getting there some real system that's government run so that we start to have accommodations for them and the process is more uniform. And that does connect then to going along with a European-wide program on how to process immigrants more smoothly, more efficiently, if they've been turned down in another country, have that information available so that they can make rapid decisions if they don't have rapid housing, in order to then potentially send them back or to move them in for another reason. But being integrated fully with Europe and having there be a reform and a real system, coming from a country where immigration reform hasn't happened for decades, that at least sounds on paper like a good process.
On paper is key there, isn't it? Because it's very easy on paper to say we'll make decisions within 6 months.
Right.
Like on paper, every child with additional needs in this country should have an assessment of needs within 6 months.
Well, you know what?
Now, there's parents up and down the country laughing out loud at that.
Well, you know what? You use the word paper, and that's a problem with this country right there. There's too much on paper. There needs to be a lot more that's done through digital and through systems and IT. That here we have the IT, so-called IT hub of Europe, and yet there are still antiquated systems of processing when there's so much technology available. And I think getting that all knit together, knitting it in with the EU, getting a system that actually works, which is foundationally run through technology, would be a way to actually move things through 6 months. And right now, it's still very fragmented and not integrated, and that's a problem.
When you're talking about integrating the system, like this is something the government are now looking at in proposing, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, proposing that Ireland opts into the EU Asylum and Migration Pact, which effectively the reason behind that is it would speed up the process. Like that remains to be seen. But I think genuinely immigration would be the big 21st century news story, because it's not a story in Ireland or just the Ireland or Britain or the US. Like it's all over Europe. And there's all sorts of factors come into play. And one of those is climate change. Like if you read the science, there are certain countries that will simply become, or certain parts of countries definitely, that become too hot to live in. So there will be more migration to countries with more temperate climates as well as richer countries. And Ireland, people might want to admit it, but it is one of the richest countries in the world. Most of the world lives in poverty. So people will always gravitate here. So you have to have a system that's worked. And the system at the moment clearly doesn't work. You know, you have people stuck in direct provision, through their whole secondary school program, 6 years. Right.
You know, decade and longer, some people, yeah. So listen, we're going to come back to that story a little bit later. We might talk in detail after 5 o'clock, exactly what might change. I mentioned kind of points of entry and how there might be an overhaul of the system there. We'll have all the detail after five. A couple of other issues that I want to talk about first. So Jonathan Hill is going to remain as the head of the FAI, is that right, Kieran?
Yeah, there was a board meeting today, and you know there was talk of a push from within to remove him, because you know we know it was highlighted a while ago about the issue around payment in lieu for his holidays that he took, and you know there did seem to be a lack of transparency around that, and then the FAI president Paul Cook, when the FAI went before the Dáil's Public Accounts Committee. You know, he very clearly didn't back him publicly. You know, he said his confidence in Jonathan Hill had been affected by what had happened. So there's been a bit of disgruntlement. Like it was noteworthy when recently the announcement of Sky sponsoring the men's team, and Jonathan Hill's one of the main parts of his job had been to find a new sponsor. He was 3.5 years doing that, trying to do that. But he had nothing to say on it. He didn't have a press cover. There was no details given around the sponsorship. The whole prolonged search for a manager. You know, these are all things that have been black marks against Jonathan Hill, as has been his decision not to live here. You know, he commutes here, spends a couple of days in Dublin and goes back to his base in his home in England. And that hasn't sat well with a lot of people. And within the FAI as well, it has to be said that a lot of the employees of the FAI have found it hard to deal with there's a lot of disgruntlement over pay and conditions, and the SIPTU represents most of the members, the FAI members, and they say they found it hard to get the FAI top brass, including Jonathan Hill, to sit down and talk to them.
Have you been impressed, Gina, by John O'Shea's Ireland team? Two games out of two, possibly. Who knows?
The performance, I think, is fine, but I think the management is same as it's been, and I think that's a problem. And I wonder why that they decide to keep someone like that when they haven't made the changes that would probably be able to create a new enthusiasm, not just for winning, but for having a winning management team as well.
One listener says on immigration, convert multi-story car parks into housing. It would make people use public transport as well. I mean, if you thought that we had anti-immigration protests before, fill the car parks with asylum seekers and tell people they have to get the bus, motorists.
Everybody has to take a bite.
It would become the defining issue, certainly, of our time. Listen, there's another kind of political issue happening today. This happens every year. Dáil an Óg is happening. So the Ceann Comhairle hosts all these different youth organisations in the Dáil, where they discuss a whole host of issues relevant to their particular age group. And they are asking for the voting age to be reduced to 16 Is there merit in the argument, Gina?
I love this story. Having been, when I was a high schooler back in the States, a member of the Model United Nations, I love the idea of like every local authority's got these youth councils. I think they're from between 12 and 18. They're all converging in Leinster House today. It convenes and they're having breakout groups and sessions and discussions, not just on that, which I'll come back to in a minute, which is interesting, but they're talking about teamwork and collaboration and hopefully how to disagree with decency and probably some parliamentary procedures and how to talk about the issues that they suggested collectively before they came in addition to the voting age. They're also apparently talking about stress in schools and body thoughts about their and also about mental health within their age groups. And I think it's just a dynamic, wonderful opportunity for kids to work critical thinking and collectively. And how now do you make an argument about whether or not 16-year-olds should be able to vote? And I want to hear their arguments. I'd love to hear their persuasions. I'd love to see how they put things together, whether or not we talk about the merit of it from a higher level. I'd rather just hear what these kids come together with and come out with, because if they can form an argument, I think that's part of the whole process of what they're there to learn and come together on in this convening that happens. I think they serve for 2 years when they're elected, yeah, when they're selected, which is terrific.
Kieran Cunningham, you're with me. We should be restricting the franchise, shouldn't we? Not expanding it.
We should be able to choose who's
allowed. Yeah, exactly. I will make a list. Start
I'd be
right
a benevolent
now.
Despot.
Those of us way over 16, let's weigh in. I think it's a great idea for them to get together on and present their arguments, and let's wait to hear them.
Well, my son Shay will be 16 shortly, so I actually asked him on the way in, did he think he should have the vote? And he wasn't sure. He says, I don't know a huge amount about it. And I said, well, a lot of people who vote don't know a huge amount.
And they read
up on it. But I have been struck, talking to him or listening to him and his friends talking. You'd be surprised what 14, 15, 16-year-olds, how much they know about the world. And, Greta Thunberg wasn't an outlier. Like, there's a huge amount of socially and politically engaged teenagers. And they care very much about the world and the way the direction the world is going in. And I think they would vote, there would be an idealism to them being involved in the political process. And maybe there's so much cynicism around politics that might be no harm having a few more idealistic voters.
Do you think, Gina, I know this is not what they're talking about today, but we often talk about it here in the context of how easier it is to vote in the States, that we should make it easier to vote here for people who live overseas, Irish citizens abroad, people who are...
Well, Irish citizens abroad, yes. For Irish citizens and for... I'm always a believer, of course, that it should be easier to vote, because you'd rather have more people coming to the polls than fewer in order to make these
types of
decisions.
Should we have more postal voting as well? I know in the States you can vote weeks in advance of an election.
But yet it's still very low voter turnout, because there's still requirements for IDs and things that are limiting different groups and making people feel concerned that they're being disenfranchised in that policy. And I think, again, with technology and some safeguards around it, there can be a lot easier ways to vote. Should it go down to 16? I happen to have a 16-year-old who wouldn't fall in that category. I hope she's not listening. Well, of course she's not listening, because she doesn't listen to this kind of stuff. Unless it's on TikTok, she's not going to listen. She would not be one of those informed. But I don't think it's necessarily about are they informed. I think it's probably just a little too young to be an active participant. I like the 18 idea, but I also do like that more people should be encouraged to take a part in politics. Politics isn't policy. It's a hard road to hoe. And I think more people that are active and engaged is what we want rather than fewer.
Michael in Cork simply says, they don't allow 16-year-olds to vote because they're 16, and I should know, I have one of them.
Likewise.
It is quite arbitrary. Yeah. Like, it has changed over the years. Like, it was 21, it was women weren't allowed to vote. There was a time only landowners could vote. Like, arbitrary restriction to be put in place
Asset. It's like any position. You know, an expansion is suggested, those who currently hang on to it don't want that expansion to happen. It dilutes their own power.
Nobody likes change. The status quo is what people grapple toward. But again, like what Kieran was just saying, the other Kieran was just saying, that the culture changes, maturity changes, the way that we think about our voting systems change, and hopefully it is for a more inclusive type of situation. Whether or not it's 16, like I said at the beginning, I'd love to see what these
landowning men, I think,
come up with.
That's my campaign. Yeah. Landowning men, bring it back. Bring it back. Bring back Trapattonis, as one listener.
Yeah, you sound like a citizen journalist. I do.
God, don't start me. Anyway, Deb on modular homes says, the reason they're so expensive here is regulations and specifications set by government pre-qualification. It's a 65-year lifespan for all materials, etc., that is required. The specification is crippling for quick build. Finishes and mechanical do not have that lifespan. Energy calculations as high as full builds, so it's not feasible at that rate, at a rate that is affordable. And so says Deb, who describes herself as working in construction. So one of the reasons it might be more expensive to rapidly build very slow houses in this country. Listen, before you go, I want to ask about illegal dumping. So kind of extra money been provided to local councils to deal with this issue today. Like, in a way, kind of discussions about expanding franchises and stuff is ethereal stuff. This really matters to people, doesn't it?
Oh, anecdotally, when I first moved here, I was hearing these stories about, oh, the people are dumping. And I'm trying to picture 1970s United States with just litter strewn along the roads. And then I was driving on a small road, country road, and I saw, oh, it's not open litter. It's actually purposeful, tied up garbage, plastic black garbage bags, purposefully dumped. And I thought, gosh, that is so interesting, where they're deciding, well, it's not bin day, because we're not going to put it in a bin, but we're going to go get in the family car and drive 100 feet away from, or 100 yards away from where we live and dump them on that. You see more and more of those now. I'm surprised, and I think there should be probably more ways to monitor and enforce the right way to dispose, because this is a beautiful country that we'd like to preserve.
I mean, there's plenty of the odd random wrapper as well thrown. It's not just the big dog. I know this is kind of anecdote as evidence, but we have a puppy at home, and bringing him for a walk, and he stops to eat every bit of rubbish. You realise that every bit of rubbish actually exists every 1 or 2 metres.
But I think it's been very striking the last couple of years that the littering problem, particularly in Dublin and in the countryside to an extent as well, but it's definitely got a lot worse than it used to be. I don't know why that, but just it seems to become a more reckless attitude towards it. And you'd, like, I was watching some programme on TG Cahir, and it was about people living near Mount Errigal in Donegal. Mm. And they were doing a clean along the roadsides and the hedgerows, and they're picking stuff up. And they were talking about people, while they were doing this, people were going past in the car and throwing stuff out the window. And like,
they could clearly
see that they were cleaning. Like, well, people have this attitude now. And like you mentioned, because local elections are coming up, do you know what the issue that's brought up more than anything else with people running for local election? What? Dog dirt. So they tell you that that's what people drives people nuts. And we mentioned it before we came in here, Jane.
Yeah.
People who go to the problem.
Oh, I know exactly.
They tie it up.
And then they leave it in the path.
They hang it on a tree.
I see it hung on the little chain link fences. Like, you went all the way to not put it on the ground, but put it up. And it's fascinating to me. But I do think, though, quickly, that there should be more rapidly changed bins in pocket parks, and even near bus stops. And on the urban level, I'm surprised that there's not more coordination with parks departments and waste management as it comes to that. I don't see that, and I'm very curious as to why.
We mentioned the psychology of expanding voter franchise. The psychology of people who go to the trouble of bringing the little poo bag in their pocket, picking up the hot bag of poo, tying it up, and then looking for a tree or a fence to hang it on. Yeah. I mean, that's somebody who needs to sit in the couch for a while. 087 1400 106, Kieran Cunningham, Gina Lund. And thank you both very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.